Chapter 22. The shock from the battle was beginning to wear off, and the dazed villagers were starting to gather closer as they tried to get a good look at what was happening around the stump demon's still smoldering remains. "Horus," I said, as my mind thought back to what I remembered about Asher lore. "I think you just became a duelist." "No," he immediately denied. "No, I can't be. My father died without enacting the passing rite."
Russ.
Shay waded through the crowd so she could stand at her brother's side, and her eyes were wide and glittering with awe.
"You know the passing is not the only way someone worthy becomes an Asher. On Blue Night, sometimes the Brea Comet will bestow those Mercedes sees fit with her divine power."
But it's not Blue Night,"
he faltered, and I nudged his shoulder. "Nope. But you did help save those farmers," I said with a growing smile at my somewhat dense friend. "And you saved my life as well as all the children of the village by killing that herald. If I remember my lessons correctly, the third way someone can become a duelist is by ashing a demon in the heat of battle."
"That's correct,"
Zoe commented as she sheathed her sword with a metallic click.
"The blessing comes from anyone who has proof in their heart of their indomitable will."
"What were you thinking about when you shot it down?" I asked, when the Falcon Man still looked dubious.
"I was thinking that nothing else mattered aside from protecting the innocent from the damnable scourge,"
Horus said with a dazed expression.
"I was thinking I would gladly forfeit my own life if it meant everyone would be safe. The need to wipe out the evil seemed to consume me the harder I fought. I mean, it's not fair, is it? These people can never seem to catch a break, and attacking children? What? Alex, why are you laughing? Stop it!"
During the course of his rant, Horace's spine straightened, and his voice took on an impassioned quality that I recognized instantly as how I felt every time Aventol called her Ashers into the fray. Maybe it was the relief at the fact I didn't succumb to being minced meat, but as I watched the Falcon Man's black-feathered crest ruffle with his indignation, I couldn't help but feel overjoyed at how I truly had a partner in crime now that he was a duelist.
"Horus, pal,"
I continued to laugh and clap him on the back.
"Welcome to the club. That's exactly what it takes to do this thing.
Are you really surprised the goddess recognized you?"
"But I'm..."
He searched for other things to argue a point he seemed to have lost based on his scowl. "H, pick up the damn stone," I ordered.
"Okay,"
he said, and did just that. When he straightened from his crouch, the crystal clear light of the stone faded slowly as Horus held it in his palm.
"It's warm."
I squeezed his shoulder. "How do you feel?" Horus didn't respond right away. Instead, his face went through a series of complex expressions I could hardly pinpoint. The roulette wheel eventually stopped somewhere between determined and beleaguered, and I frowned when I spied a solitary tear roll down his cheek. Before anyone noticed it, the Falcon Man swiped the trail of moisture away so swiftly that I wondered if it was just a figment of my imagination. "Horus," I intoned. But the Falcon Man's face stretched into its familiar grin.
"I think you mean Asher Horus."
"That's what I'm talking about," I grinned back.
"Let us rouse ourselves for the Ashers!"
a loud voice boomed out, and I laughed as the Falcon Man startled at the sudden round of cheering from the villagers.
"They saved us!"
A few of the children from the silo were clapping and dancing around as Anwar and Amaya held some of the younger ones' hands.
"Get used to the adoration, Asher Horus," I said to my stunned friend, as I threw my arm around his shoulders.
"Ambassador Brightwood,"
Thass came forward along with Leader Zair.
"I owe you a life debt for saving me."
"No worries, Thass," I said, and then bent to retrieve my fallen sword.
"And?"
Zair said, as he prodded the large man forward slightly with his walking stick.
"And I've come to tell you I shall be your loyal knight from henceforth,"
Thass added and placed a fist over his heart.
"Thank you,"
I nodded and did my best not to make it sound like a question.
"Ambassador Brightwood,"
Zair said,
"what you and your friends have done here for us is unparalleled. This is the first time since the Red Skies returned where we managed to escape without a single loss of life. We owe you much."
"Har, har,"
Siskern cheered, and the entire crowd echoed him. "We're just glad we could help," I said to Zare over the din of appreciative applause.
"The ambassador has proven his heart is pure, and his motivations just," the leader called out over his people. "We shall prepare a magnificent feast because this evening Brightwood will be undergoing the onslaught." "Har, har!"
Another cascade of shouts and revelry erupted through the village people, and in a sudden frenzy of activity, the Terrans dispersed and went about their preparations. My crew and I went about helping clean up the area with the other villagers, and I even lent my skills as a farmhand to help repair the fences and patch up the silo. Horus, for his part, was also trying to help, but he wasn't getting too much done given he had a trail of some of the more precocious kiddos following him everywhere. They kept asking him questions about Nada Isle as they tried to touch his bow and quiver. And as patient as the Falcon Man was with kids, I could tell having about 15 of them underfoot was starting to be a little much. Luckily, Shay and Zoe seemed to notice, and they corralled the young ones over so they could entertain them with songs and stories. Then Horace slipped away and joined me in wheeling barrows full of wood back to the center of the village, where a huge bonfire was taking shape. But we were both stopped several times on the way so random Terrans could shake our hands and slap us on the back. A few of those Terrans happened to be the farmers Horace saved. Apparently they needed to stop the Falcon Man and tell him how they would be naming their new hatchling after him. Horace awkwardly thanked them, and after they went on their way with their baskets of root vegetables, my friend lapsed into the same pensive silence as before.
"I never thought I would ever be one, you know," he said after we resumed our task. "A duelist, I mean. Maybe there was a time when I was young enough and still had my father's favor. But when I didn't do what he asked and refused to become his personal alchemist, he made it very clear he would die before ever enacting the passing rite. So any dreams I had of being an Asher faded away. And now, I don't know what to feel."
"It seems as if you were always meant to be one," I commented as we dumped our loads.
"But what if it's a mistake?"
Horace asked, as he turned his large gold-green eyes on me. "Why would you think it's a mistake?" I frowned, and cocked my head at him.
"I just..." he sighed. "I can't shake this deep-seated feeling inside me like there is a burden on my shoulders pressing down on me. I feel like I'm drowning under the weight of responsibility, and I'm pretty sure I'm the last person who is equipped for this."
"Horace, dude," I said, and gave his arm a little shake to snap him out of his existential spiral. "It's not a mistake. In my admittedly limited experience, I can tell you the goddess doesn't make mistakes. That feeling you feel, I feel it too. Every waking moment when I realize how much I have to protect and how much I have to lose." I let my gaze land on Zoe, Shay, and Amaya as they worked together and helped some of the villagers erect a smallish tent. Horace gazed on as well as Anwar let some of the reptile children wrap flowering vines around her long curved horns.
"The goddess doesn't make mistakes," the Falcon Man murmured.
I glanced at him and noticed his jaw was clenched as his eyes shimmered a little with moisture, and I looked away. "That feeling of burden," I went on. "From what I'd gathered so far, it comes with the job. Imagine a bunch of people without that burden endowed with not only the divine power of a goddess, but with the conviction to rule over the land."
"What do you mean?" he asked.
"I mean absolute power corrupts absolutely. And I think that feeling we all feel is a reminder about how much we stand to lose if we use our power solely for our own gain, or to oppress other people," I said, as I turned this philosophy over in my mind. "I don't know if I'm right. It just feels true."
"It sounds like truth to me," Horace mused along with me, and placed his hands on his hips.
Then he tilted his head back like he was feeling the sunshine on his face, even though it was perpetually twilight down in Lower Tear.
"It's terrifying. How do you do it?"
"To be honest," I said and nudged his shoulder, "it's kind of nice someone else gets it. Makes the burden less, you know. You're my best friend, so I'm glad you can join me in serving the goddess and protecting the world."
"Aw, Alex,"
Horace said, with his typical shit-eating grin, and he batted his eyelashes at me.
"I had no idea you felt that way, baby."
"Oh, fuck off," I laughed, and shoved him away. He laughed back, and I was relieved to see the last bit of tension bleed out of him.
Really, though.
Thank you. I got your back, H, I said, and clasped his forearm.
Ambassador,
Leader Zare cut in as he approached, and on either side of him were both Siskern and Thass.
Come, we have much to prepare you before the feast and the trial.
The alligator elder then gestured to one of the lodges where I was provided with some local garb, which happened to be a loincloth. Then I had to do my best to sit perfectly still while Siskern and Thass coated my skin in strange symbols with paint that glowed in the dark.
This is the start of how we prepare the body for the trial, Siskern said, as he drew what felt like a zigzagging line across my forehead. This will help you blend into the forest when you walk the demon's spine. There will be many creatures that will want to eat you, but painted like this you will resemble a meander, a type of animal poisonous to most predators.
Most? I echoed with my eyes closed and winced at the cold wetness being painted on my eyelids.
You will also be provided with a ceremonial dagger to fend off anything else, Thass said.
And when I opened my eyes, the large man had a stone dagger and its sheath held out to me. I took it and tied the weapon around my waist as Leader Zare then came over with something cupped in his hands. It looked like it was a small bowl with potpourri, but when he wafted the stuff under my nose, it was definitely not potpourri whatsoever.
Shit!
I coughed as my eyes watered.
No, let them run,
Zare said, as he caught my wrist to prevent me from rubbing the stinging tears out of my eyes.
The dried tracks on your cheeks are thought to please the goddess.
I did what he said, and I breathed in another burning lungful of the spicy smoke when the little bowl came back.
Huh. What is this stuff?
I asked, as the glowing shapes on the back of my hand started to squiggle around.
This herb will purify you from the inside so your body may go faster and stronger for longer,
a voice replied. But I couldn't tell if it was Siskern or Zare.
Oh,
I said, and blinked to try to clear the sudden double vision I was having.
Ambassador!
Fast then came into my hazy view and placed a large wooden basin in my lap.
Well, what's this for?
I asked, as I tried to focus on the large bald man in front of me. Or at least one of them.
You will soon have the answer to that,
both Thasses said with a sharp grin. Before my compromised brain could figure out what that ominous statement meant, a sick, oily sensation made the back of my throat spasm. The term purify took on a new meaning as I lurched forward and puked magnificently into the bowl on my knees.
There,
Zare encouraged in a surprisingly gentle tone as he lightly patted my shoulder.
Let it run its due course.
After I spat the rest of the bile out of my mouth, Siskern removed the bowl, dumped the contents on the low-burning brazier, and placed it back in my lap.
Again?
I panted, when Zare brought the small bowl of herbs back up to my face.
You are in for a bit more, I'm afraid.
The leader gave me a rueful smile, and guided me to inhale the smoke once more. I gagged, and my eyes overflowed once more, as my nostrils stung from the herbs.
I'm not sure there's anything left for me to...
I lurched over the bowl again, and cringed at how much still seemed to fall out. For the next hour, this process repeated itself until my throat became raw, and the muscles in my abdomen grew sore from all the heaving I was doing. By the time I was spitting out nothing but weak strings of bile, my insides felt thoroughly hollowed out.
Here, drink,
the leader said, as he handed me a cup full of clean water after he took away my barf bowl.
How do you feel?
Empty,
I replied, and then swished some water around to get the foul taste out of my mouth.
Good,
he said, as he placed a palm on the top of my head.
Now the replenishing can commence.
Thass and Siskern helped me to my feet, and I let them lead me out of the tent where the bonfire was already roaring. Several smaller fires were camped around the main event, and each was spit-roasting some sort of animal carcass. The villagers were chatting and laughing as they milled around, and I spotted the mech sisters sitting with some of the women as they kneaded dough for the flatbread standard of Terran cuisine. They were each also sporting some traditional Terran garb, which was a loincloth and bikini top combo made of the same animal skin I was wearing. Horus was on the ground next to Anwar as he fashioned himself some new arrowheads out of the obsidian-like stone my new ceremonial dagger was made out of. But he looked up just then and caught my eye with a smile and a wave. When I staggered over to them with the heavy aid of Siskern, Horus jumped up and helped lower me to the ground on the soft blankets.
"How are you feeling, Chief?" he asked. "They told us what you were going through in there. Not fun."
"Yeah, I've been better," I grunted, and gave Siskern a grateful glance when he passed me some ale in a wooden tankard.
The honey sweetness distracted me from the acidic taste that still lingered on the back of my tongue, and I sighed a little as the warm mead soothed the rawness in my throat.
"Try some of this,"
Amaya said, as she came over to kneel in front of me with a basket of fresh-fried flatbread. I reached for a piece and gingerly nibbled on the corner. Suddenly, my empty stomach roared with hunger, and I couldn't eat the bread fast enough.
"Get the ambassador some meat,"
Thass ordered, nobody in particular, as he marched over to our area and sat down.
"Do not worry, Ambassador Brightwood. This part of the process is much more favorable than the first."
"Hmm." I could only nod, because my cheeks were full of bread, and then full of the roasted meat one of the villagers set down in front of me. But once the desperate edge of my hunger was settled, I came up for air.
"Where are Zoe and Shay?"
"They are getting ready for you,"
Amaya said as she leaned against my side.
"What do you mean?" I asked.
"The replenishing is about fulfilling more than one appetite,"
Thass said with a cryptic grin, and before I could ask what he meant, I was distracted by the line of women parading out of the main lodge to the sound of a fast drumbeat. The women formed two circles around the bonfire, and then they twirled, laughed, and sang to the beat. After a few minutes of turning around in a dizzying gale, two figures broke away from the outer circle and headed over to me. Maybe it was the lingering effects from the ordeal in the tent, but when Zoe and Shay approached me with their skimpy garb and painted skin, I could have sworn I was dead, and this was paradise. They both took my hands and had me stand up, and I followed them into the frenzy of writhing and heaving bodies. Everything was too loud for talking, but the way my wives and I moved against each other needed no words. My skin felt electrified, and the more we danced, the more energized I felt. I brought Shay back to the front with me while Zoe rubbed against me from behind. We gyrated together as the temperature spiked, and I felt my heart hammer harder and harder in my chest. All around me, other Terrans were joining the celebration until the three of us were lost in the churning crowd like it was our own private island of isolation.
"Husband,"
Shay breathed when my hands began to wander up and over her body to fondle her narrow waist and voluptuous breasts. Shay's small fingers twined in my hair and pulled my head back a little so Zoe could then devour my mouth in a furious kiss that had the blood pooling in my lower abdomen as my cock stirred under its flimsy loincloth.
"Mercedes,"
I breathed when we broke for air and changed positions to the beat of the drums. And now the Phoenix woman was in the middle of Zoe and I as we writhed together to the music. The colors of the paint on all of our skin started to blend and shift, and the ground under my feet actually had a heartbeat I could feel alongside my own. I felt connected to the people around me, and through their eyes I was able to see Tear for what it was, this beautiful yet strange place ravaged by a scourge that left behind a festering wound. A deep camaraderie and oneness I felt among these people soaked into my bones the longer we moved to the music, and my skin tingled with the need to hold my wives even closer until the fullness inside of me threatened to burst.
"Alex, come with us,"
Zoe finally said as she grabbed my hand. Shay looped her arm around my waist on the opposite side, and I let my two beautiful wives lead me away from the dancing and over to the tent they'd been working on earlier.
"The Terrans wanted your replenishment to be as comfortable as possible,"
Shay said, and moved aside the colorful tapestry that acted as the tent's front door.
"The women taught us how to build a marriage nest."
Inside, a small lantern hanging from the ceiling cast a dim blue glow over the blankets and pillows piled on the ground. And on a small wooden stool to the side was a tray with a flagon of wine as well as some dried fruits and nuts. "You both prepared all this?" I asked, when they had me lay back on the pile of blankets so they could feed me a few sips of wine.
"We wanted this time between us to be meaningful,"
Zoe purred as she slinked up the length of my body and fed me something that tasted like a date. "It already is," I groaned, as Shay peppered my bare chest with kisses.
No, it isn't,
Zoe said, before she nibbled my ear.
But it will be.